My name is Paola Tester. I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another project by Anthony Gormley in Trafalgar Square. The date is the 8th of September 2009 and the time is 4:30 a.m. Please could you tell me your name, your age and where you're from?
My name is Julia Tobin. I'm using my birth name on the plinth, Damasa. I'm aged 43. And I live in Bottisford, which is in Leicestershire.
And have you travelled to London, especially for your hour on the plinth?
I have indeed, yes.
And just coming to the square this morning and seeing the plinth in action, been how you imagined it would be?
Yes, it has actually. It looks really beautiful.
And how are you feeling about going up on the plinth?
You know, excited. I think it's... I'm wondering kind of how it's going to go. I'm just going to really just enjoy it. It's going to be so nice just to have an hour of calm solitude to just, you know, think and, yeah, just take stock.
What is it about the project that first appealed to you and made you want to be a part of it?
In the year 2000... Anthony Gormley's sculpture at the Millennium Dome just thought it was a most astonishing piece of art. Everyone talks of the Angel of the North. When I heard about the project, I did want to be part of that sort of form, that human shape. Upon the plinth.
And when you first heard that you had an hour on the plinth, how did you react?
Well, I was kind of hoping, obviously in my way, that it would be in the summer holiday, being a mum, that it would be in the summer holidays, you know, middle of the day, middle of the summer holidays, so that everybody could come with me and we could have a day out to London and it would just be really great. And here I am, it's Tuesday morning and I'm going on at 5 o'clock in the morning, which means that I'm not going to be there for the school run and nobody's been able to come with me. But hey, it's still worth doing. Some journeys are just worth making the effort to do.
And what does this opportunity mean to you to be one of the people going up on the plinth?
I brought my story shapes and my story shaping cube with me. These are two products that I've invented in my work now, previously, well, I still am a teacher. And now I have a small business which has elements of teaching, story, language, literacy, communication, speaking and listening. And I make objects, prompts, props that help people make stories together. So to have an opportunity to show them to one person that might be watching or just happen to be tuning in that would like to, you know, find out more, maybe invest in what I do, that would be, you know, pretty amazing, really. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter.
And could you tell me exactly what you will be doing for the hour on the plinth?
Well, I was thinking of, because it might not go this way, but in my prep, in my sort of planning for the hour, I wanted to do some performance art upon the plinth, partly because this is an arts project and, you know, there is this whole idea of being a living sculpture. I wanted to tap very much into that. So one of the, because I work in role as a story shaper, one of my new characters is from a Ben Jonson play. It's a long story, but it's an amazing story, but it's a bit long now, so I don't want to go into too much detail. Ben Jonson is a contemporary of William Shakespeare and he's writing 400 years ago here in London. And we were sort of wheel forward a few years to Ben Jonson's last play, which is called The Sad Shepherd, which is an unfinished play because sadly he died before I had a chance to complete it. It's set in Sherwood Forest. And it is, believe it or not, about Robin Hood and Maid Marian. This is what this play is about. And I've just had a big arts project, story project, family storytelling project that I've been doing with Sherwood Forest Trust. And so I developed this character for the Sherwood Forest Trust arts project over the summer at their tree fests. I'm very keen on forests and trees, and they figure a lot in the work that I do in natural landscapes, and we make stories outdoors all the time. It's just such a great place to be, and here I am on the plinth, it's outside, outdoors. So I'm bringing this character, Eorinne, and I'm bringing her back to London because I think if we look at the play, we don't get to find out what Ben Jonson had intended for this character in his play because we didn't complete it. But she gets lost in the forest and isn't found. And so in my thinking, I'm actually rediscovering this character and bringing her back to London, back home safely 400 years later, or almost 400 years later. And she's coming without any friends and without really knowing what's happened at home, if there have been any changes or what's gone on. And she's kind of a bit disoriented and a bit lost. But she has these objects in her bag, which means such a lot to her. And she rediscovers them again on the plinth in London, in Trafalgar Square in London. And they remind her of everything, of her past, of her memories, of the people that she's known and loved, and everything that she's experienced and shared. It all comes back through these objects. And the objects, of course, are the objects that are my objects, Julia's objects that I've invented. So I'm kind of weaving together Julia's story with the story of this lost woman wandering around the forest for 400 years. To tie into the whole genre, I've written some sonnets, some work, and I've written some material for this plinth appearance, which I will do in the second part of the hour.
And how do you view this hour? Do you view it as a performance?
Yeah, performance art. Because I think that the plinth is intended to be a site and it for an equestrian sculpture, originally, but now it's there for public art, and I think then I'm a member of the public and I'm going to do some of my kind of art or art that I enjoy or that I like, and bring some pieces of art that I like to the plinth. Well, I've brought the soft tactile story shapes. There's five symbols. And on the cube is a wooden carved cube with, again, the six faces on a cube. So the sixth face of the cube has the story shaping cube label, name. And the five symbols that I use in story shaping are place. So where does your story take place? Time, when does the story happen? Character, who is the story about? Question, what is the character's question? And idea, how do we help the character find the answer to their question? And that's, in the essence, that's a very kind of simple way of explaining what story shaping is. And story shaping is a story making, sharing and telling model that I've created through my work as a teacher and as a mum and as an actor. Yes, always. When I was a child, my mum tells me that when I was a child, I used to say to her, "Mum, tell me a story from your mouth." And when I said from your mouth, what I meant to her was, don't read me a story. I want you to make a story up that's just for me. And I want to be the hero of the story. So make one up. And my mum had, four children, you know, and I was the eldest and I was seven. So that's a seven-year-old and then three under seven. And she was pretty much on her own. And at nighttime, bedtime, I think the last thing she felt able to do, being tired and feeling maybe that she just, I don't know, not creative enough to make up a story. Of course, that's not true, but I guess that's how she felt. So then when I became a mum, my son did the same thing to me. Didn't want me to read him a story at bedtime. He wanted me to make up a story. I thought, oh, well, I better find the way of doing it. So I invented this way, which meant that I would only have to ask questions. And, you know, my family would be the creators of the story. They would give all the ideas and share their responses. And all I would have to do is just ask some very simple questions. Where does your story take place? When does it happen? Who is it about? What is their question? How do we help them find the answer to the question? And that's what makes us authors, because they then and they become the authors of the owners of brand new stories, and it belongs to them. So this method, which I call story shaping, is so central now to my family, and not just, you know, it's intergenerational, so it spans, you know, right the way to grandparents and greats as well, and filters down, you know, through to the children and hopefully beyond when they become parents. So it's about creating family folklore. It taps into the oral storytelling tradition that I think maybe we're losing, which is a shame. There's so many other things that are out there to take our focus away from just sitting around and very gently and in together sharing the making of stories. Well, I think it's everything that I think of in terms of cultural satisfaction, spiritual well-being. It's kind of really holistic, because it sort of taps into learning and loving language, but also it's imaginative, and it's about make-believe and making things up, but in a way where we're able to use our knowledge and understanding and experiences of the world as well. So it's sort of like faction. It's like a mixing of fact and fiction. And I'm doing some research at the moment for my PhD, which is kind of all about what's happening in our brain when we're doing this. Then what if we're using our memories and our knowledge and understanding of the world simultaneously with using the creative part of our brain here at the front, the prefrontal cortex? What an amazing capacity to be able to help people become creative thinkers. I know we can all think, but, you know, sometimes it's... It's kind of, I like to know the kind of, I always like to know the bigger picture, really, and I'm always exploring and seeking adventures, and hey, I guess that's kind of why I must have applied, I suppose.
And you've described yourself as a lot of different things, an actor, a performance artist, a storyteller, a teacher. How do you work all of these things together?
I think that's just me. I'm a creative practitioner. I've always been like that, and I think there are some people that who are artists and maybe I'm just don't know, maybe I just can't focus on one thing. I don't know, maybe it's a flaw rather than a positive. I don't know. Yeah, that question, I don't know the answer to. I don't know until it's done. I mean, I hope there will be an impact, but as to how that impact kind of manifests itself or expresses itself, I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see.
Who would you say that you're doing it for?
Do you know what? I could say I'm doing it for my family, but actually, I'm not. I'm doing it for me. for me. And yeah, for me, I'm doing it just for me. Isn't that so selfish? What can I say? That is sorry, everyone. Courage, courage and encouragement.
What are the things that are important to you in your life at the moment?
My family are always most important to me. So, family. Yeah, I think they think it's fantastic. I mean, they're used to me doing all these strange, projects. You know, they're used to me doing arts projects anyway. This isn't strange, please. That's the wrong word. Just unusual. Doing something a bit different.
How would you describe your involvement in this project? Since hearing that you had a place to this moment before going up on the plinth, what has that journey been like for you?
Well, I haven't really had, I've planned in my head about 20,000 different variations of what to do in the hour and sort of whittled it down to virtually, I don't know, nothing, just something really raw and exploring solitude and being alone and maybe being heckled, a kind of spontaneous discovery of what it's like to be up on a plinth on your own for an hour.
Do you have any expectations?
Oh, no, I don't have any expectations, no. So.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome, thank you.